You're listening to a podcast presentation of Hillside Four Square Church in Reno, Nevada.
Jerusalem is a city that kind of sits like it's inside of a bowl of hills. And in order to get up to the city of Jerusalem, people have to climb. And so some clever individual ended up saying, these songs as we ascend, let's call them the songs of ascent. And they have played a very key role in the Israelite people who had been, again, scattered all over the world, be able to gather and say, okay, this is who we are. This is what our commitment is. This is our hope. This is our life together. And they're able to then take that with them. Wherever we are, whatever our life situation, we're more than just that. We are God's chosen people, chosen not because we're special, but because he is. And his characteristics and the way that he chooses to have us live is better than the alternative. And so as they would climb the hills into Jerusalem, they're rehearsing the things that God has done. They're rehearsing their own history. They're revisiting things that are key points in their history as a people. And the inspiration for this series has been, I've been wrestling through it for the last several years, trying to figure out what it would end up looking like when we did it. And I'm so thankful for Chris and for Sean and Joey Lear and Richard and just Scott and others that have been, Andrew, who have been participating over time in making these things come to life and in singing and creating the songs that we're singing. All of them are, for lack of a better word, they're all originals, taking from basically the message version of the Psalms of Ascent and adding music to it. We're hillsiding them. I just verbed that. We're hillsiding the Psalms of Ascent. On Saturday, November 4th at 6:30, we're going to be having a concert with all of them at the same time. Not playing at the same time, but consecutively. Because at the same time, that would be cacophonous. We don't want that. But one after the other. So that's going to be coming up first weekend in November. One of my favorite books in the whole world is a book called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction by Eugene Peterson. And it is a study in the Psalms of Ascent. And I love one of the quotes that the whole title comes from. And it says this: the essential thing in heaven and earth is that there should be a long obedience in the same direction. There thereby results and has always resulted in the long run something which has made life worth living. And the thing that makes life worth living is a purpose that is beyond us, and a purpose that is not just beyond us, but beyond this world, the purpose that's coming for the next world. I, for me, would identify the main theme of these 15 Psalms as being perseverance, and especially perseverance in the life following after God's principles and his precepts. And so this is my own dictionary definition of perseverance: to persist in anything undertaken, to maintain a purpose in spite of difficulty, obstacles, discouragement, or challenges. When I was a kid, I played football. We didn't know about CTE. We didn't care about CTE. We just liked to put pads on and run into each other. I'm mostly okay now, as I've evaluated myself. But one of my highlights was we would go from the what do they call it? Exercising for no good reason without pads on. We were doing conditioning, and that would happen June, July, August. And when we hit the beginning of August, we had a really intensive time in conditioning, and then we got to put the pads on. And it was crazy to me how, as we're putting the pads on and we start to go through stuff, how everything kind of changed. And it got more difficult. It was like the dark ages before the internet. I was in high school. It was like the 80s. It's like, imagine the fashions of today, except 30 years ago without any of the... Yeah, that's it. That's really what it is. But in the 80s, they hadn't discovered that all the crashing together multiple times could be potentially bad for you. So we would have two-a-days practices for football. Anybody ever done two-a-days before? Hey, yes, two-a-days. And it was like, this is where, you know, it was like there was an approach to coaching that was much more shame-based and yelling and screaming. And you know, if you're going to be a quitter, you can go ahead. But if you really want to be a man someday, then you have to suffer like this. And it's this rite of passage. And people did it. And I can remember where, as we're going through stuff, by about week two, anybody who had had any ideas that football was glamorous, that this is going to be really fun because you're under the lights on Friday. You know, it's not glamorous two-a-days on Tuesday. You know, when you know exactly what you had for lunch because it's back. There's nothing glamorous about that when you're learning how to tackle. And there's always that kid, you know, when you're playing Pop Warner, everybody's about the same size, or was. In high school football, you can play against anybody. And when there was this one guy, his name was Mike. And Mike was kind of built like a bowling pin. And he was about 6 inches bigger and 150 pounds bigger than anybody else. And he's just muscle. He ended up playing in college as well. And I can just remember the first time Mike hit me with his shoulder pads. And what I remember is I'm laying on the ground on my back. And there's the contents of my sinuses have been emptied into my face mask. And I'm just laying there and thinking, I'm playing football. And a lot of people ended up quitting. And the first couple people that quit is like, yeah, those guys are quitters. As the season went on, I was like, those guys are lucky because they don't have to do this anymore. And there's an aspect of our faith where it can be easier to give up than to continue to persevere. Now, in no way, shape, or form, the main substance of Psalm 128 today is going to be about it's better to live life with Christ than without. And it's easier to live life with Christ than without. But there's still hard things that we got to go through. But as we persevere, we will find that we're not suffering for no good reason. The things that we go through build character and build patience and build the integrity of who God has for us to be. It's much more difficult if we were to look at our life as thinking, you know, I just want to get an overview of what Christianity is about, maybe have a couple good experiences and then move on. God is not trying to prepare us for jeopardy. Okay? A lot of our approach towards Christianity could be, I just want to know the important things. So when he throws out books of the Bible or names, I say, yeah, I've heard that one before. That's not the goal. You can totally ace jeopardy and miss the entire purpose of what Christianity is about. Because Christianity is not about knowing all the things. So many of us get intimidated about ever sharing about our faith because we wonder what if someone asks us a question we don't know the answer to? Anybody worry about that? It's like you're supposed to be a PhD in Jesus. I get asked questions all the time I don't know the answer to. And there's three little words that are so powerful and helpful. I don't know. I don't know. And if that diminishes me in the eyes of the person who's asking the question, it's like, I personally think God's kind of a big topic. And there's not a whole lot I'm going to kind of be able to memorize. And a lot of the information around it is, it's important, but it's not, it's almost peripheral. You know, Jesus said, if you're going to come to me like a little child would. It doesn't mean come to me in a childish manner, but come to me before you have everything figured out, just come running. Now, one of my favorite things about the outreach to the Reno Sparks and even Carson area that our church does, Little Lights Preschool, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., we've got kids galore here. And I have really found a huge amount of fulfillment in being able to see these little ones as they grow up, learn about not just facts about Jesus, but learn what do we do when we're in a situation where somebody gets hurt, because somebody's always getting hurt. Because it's like little kid 101. We have a swing set. Swing sets are fun, right? You can tell a 3 or 4 year old kid, if you're out by the swing set, don't walk in front of the people swinging. And they know this. They know. And they turn around and they walk from here to there. And this last, I think it was 2 weeks ago, this dear, sweet little girl is in the office, and I said, well, what happened? And she's bleeding from her nose. I said, she was walking, and she took a shortcut by the swings. And so what happened was the little boy who was swinging, because, you know, you don't stop when you're swinging, because if you stop, people take the swing. And so as she's walking, he hits her perfect, and just kind of, and launches her. And it's sad and terrible, and it's like, I wish we could take away the pain, but to see what happened afterwards, where the little kids run over to her and they're, can we pray for this little girl? And they're praying for her that she'll be healed and that the blood will stop and that the pain will go away and that she'll remember not to walk in front of the swings and it's all this stuff. It's like they're learning more than just the happy Bible stories. They're learning when we're hurt, we can run to Jesus. I love that. Also, this last week, Joni got interviewed by our parent organization, Foursquare, and they're doing an article on her and the preschool. Yes. So, bragging. I'm bragging. Yes. And there was a point in this when the interviewer asked me, so, you know, what's your role? And I said, I'm not really involved in this in any way, shape, or form. I'm sanctuary guy. Sometimes I walk around and I kind of make life more difficult for the teachers, but this is really Joni and her team. It's not me. And I'm so thankful to see we're reaching about 12 different nations with the people who are coming. And it's gotten to the point where another couple comes through and Joni or Stephanie, our other director, will say something to the effect, they're from Ukraine or they're from Jamaica or they're from Ireland. So it's like we're counting different ways. God trusts us to be able to reach people because we're not just reaching them. We reach the entire community of people that they're connected to. So that was a commercial. It has nothing to do really with what I was talking about other than we want to have more than just Jeopardy information about God. We want to know what really matters. We want to be people who are disciples. We want to be able to acknowledge as a disciple, what are the ways that our world works and what are the ways that it's like the kingdom of God works. Because in order for us to be able to choose God's ways and follow his purposes, we also have to be able to know where's the rut? Where is the easy way that we're going to get caught, the wide path that if we're just walking, we're going to kind of fall into it. Just by living on this planet, where is that? Because in order for us to live for Christ, we have to actively resist the ways and means of this world. That doesn't mean we get weird and we check out and we wear special tinfoil hats or anything like that. It means I need to know what are the pitfalls so I can avoid them and embrace God's kingdom ways and means. Because as people who are not tourists, but we are pilgrims, we are people who are spending our life going somewhere towards God through Jesus Christ. Right on? So, Psalm chapter 128. And these two Psalms, Psalm 128 and Psalm 129, are like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You'll know what I'm talking about when we get to Psalm 129. Psalm 129 is one of those, I'm angry, I'm ticked off, and God, here's what I'd like you to do to those people who have wronged me. And there's not a happy ending at the end. It's like, but it's all good, I just want the best for them. No, really, it kind of ends in one of those spots on, and rub their face in it too. Okay, but anyway, Psalm 128. All you who fear God, how blessed you are. How happily you walk on his smooth, straight road. You worked hard and deserve all you've got coming. Enjoy the blessing. Revel in the goodness. Your wife will bear children as a vine bears grapes, and your household lush as a vineyard. The children around your table as fresh and promising as young olive shoots. Stand in awe of God's yes. Oh, how he blesses the one who fears God. Enjoy the good life in Jerusalem every day of your life. And enjoy your grandchildren. Peace to Israel. There is a general assumption in the world that it is difficult to be a Christian. And if you're going to be like a serious Christian, you have to be almost like born to it or raised by wolves. Or you have to be raised in a very challenging type of a situation. Because the normal Christians wouldn't really be able to do what like the real hardcore, like extraordinary Christians would do. Right? No, not right. It's like, well, I could never. You've ever had that thought when you're thinking about following Jesus? Well, I could never be like that because like that is just beyond me. You know, they were the people who at age two were voluntarily engaging in fasting from juice because they just wanted to. They'd had somebody read the scriptures to them. It's like juice is something I would enjoy, so I'm not going to have juice. And so at two, they're just showing an incredible way of, you know, they're able to, when they're playing on the playground, it's like, rather than going and swinging on the swing or riding on the bikes, which are the top two things to do, I'd go and stand and I'd just gather the ball when the kids would kick it and I'd throw it back to them. Not because I don't need to play. I just want to have other people play. That's where we come from if we're really going to be a great Christian. We do those types of things. We deny ourselves. We avoid anything that's good or fun. No, it's like signing up for the Mother Teresa. I want suffering, India, you know, dirtier the better, no good food, mostly bugs. I will eat bugs. That'll be like my training for righteousness. And we can think, well, that's silly. But in a lot of ways, we can say, well, that's what I'm just an ordinary Christian. And I would posit the idea that there's no such thing as an ordinary Christian. And that we are all Christian who are following after Jesus Christ. And it's not harder to live in this world as a Christian than it is to live as not one. This last week, we got to, I mean, literally last Sunday, the news from Las Vegas and 59 people killed and 500 people wounded in this terrorist activity. Looking at thinking that has a huge effect, not just on our nation, but this is Las Vegas. This is our state. You know, Joni and I had talked briefly about going to this concert. It had been months ago, and there's like three guys that were playing that I really wanted to see. And we decided not to go because it was the same weekend as something else that was happening, and also because we were able to go see one of the guys I wanted to see up at the lake in the first weekend in September. So I'm thinking through, I didn't have one of those moments, you know, we could have been there. Yeah, we could have if we'd bought the tickets and gone. But, you know, there's a lot of people who say that. But there's this thing of this happened. To go through tragedies, over the last couple of weeks, you know, I just saw that the Hurricane Nate, is that what's coming next? Coming to Louisiana? It's been downgraded to a tropical storm? Yeah. So how many hurricanes do we need to have? Well, we've got through Z, then I guess they start over. But over and over and over again, there's suffering and terrible things happening. It's much easier to go through life with Christ in the middle of the sufferings of life, which are going to hit everybody, than it is to go through without him. How do we navigate through loss? How do we navigate through sickness? How do we navigate through tragedy? How do we navigate through disaster without Jesus? We don't. Because ultimately we're looking for something of greater meaning, greater hope. And Jesus offers that in spades. And when he says, you don't have to be afraid because I am with you. I'm never going to leave you. I'll never forsake you. He doesn't mean until it gets tough. It means no matter what, I'm walking through this with you. We live in a broken, dying world, and bad stuff happens all the time. He will never leave us or forsake us. So what does it mean to fear God? This doesn't mean being afraid. It means having reverence or awe. It's let's take God at his word and let him be who he says he is versus in kind of reconstructing him as some reasonable, manageable facsimile of himself that makes more sense. If you don't have a hard time grasping, like when you start thinking through God and who he is and what he does and how he does stuff, if you don't have a hard time with that, if it's like, yeah, I've got pretty much God, I understand him. You've created him. God, as he is, his ways are far beyond our ways. We know the best way we can know about him is what we see in Jesus. Jesus told his disciples, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Does that mean in Jesus we get to see everything about who the Father is? No, we just got to see a living, breathing, in the flesh version of God the Father with his priorities, doing what he does. The religious leaders, when they saw that, had completely reimagined what they thought, if God was in the flesh, what he would be like. And they totally missed Jesus there. But he said, if you've seen me, this is what God is like. This is what his priorities are. He's not ticked off. He's not angry. He's not looking to condemn. He's not looking to start hucking lightning bolts. Now, John the Baptist, when he saw Jesus is here, he's like, finally, there's going to be justice. And there came a point where he's like, he asks Jesus, so are you the one that we should be expecting? Or is there someone else coming? Because I was expecting, you know, the thunder to roll and the lightning to flash and there to be some like, boom, judgment. And Jesus is like, now is not the time for judgment. Now is the time for salvation. The Lord is gracious and compassionate and slow to anger and rich in love and is good to all. He has compassion on everyone that he's made. What he wants to do is to bring reconciliation and reuniting of relationship. And to be able to say, God, who is like you on heaven and earth? Someone who can forgive sin. Someone who extends grace. Who doesn't judge us according to what we've done, but gives us mercy, paying the price himself instead of expecting us to do it. It goes far beyond anything we could grasp. Over and over, the theme from Genesis to Revelation is God is the rescuer. God is the deliverer. God is the fortress. God is the one who always takes the first step towards us. And the psalmist says, people who revere God, you're going to live a blessed life. This does not mean you're going to live a life without pain and suffering. It doesn't mean that everything great's ever going to happen to you. But for the Hebrew person, as they're looking at this, he's starting to earmark some things. Here's things that are going to be true. Here, I wanted to show you a couple of pictures. And so this one is in the Golan Heights in Israel. These are actual vineyards. And vineyards take about at least 5 years to develop, especially in the Middle East or in the Near East, where it's a very arid country. So after the vineyards, we also have the fruit of the vineyards, the grapes, they really keep the vines closer to the ground because they don't get hardly any rain. And so they're banking on both irrigation and also that the dew that is on the ground in the morning would be something to water the grapes. And then olive trees, the Garden of Gethsemane. Olive trees are incredible. They can be up to 20 to 25 feet tall and almost the same amount around. Just monstrous. And in the Garden of Gethsemane, it's this olive oil press. It is just flocks and flocks and flocks of trees. If you can have flocks. Groves. They're flocking. And so olives on the tree. And then the next one. This is the trunk of a tree. And these are olive shoots coming off. And so with a person who's a Hebrew, he's looking and thinking, what are the two things that are like, this is like the best, as good as it gets. So it's going to be, there's oil or olive oil and there's wine. This is the mark of a blessed life. It's richness. And as he's looking at, he says, this is what it's going to be like. You're going to have a fertility in your home. There's going to be a bunch of kids and they're going to be growing it's going to be proof that God is blessing you. They're going to be growing and they're going to be everywhere. And they're going to be eating you out of house and home. And it's going to be wonderful. And you can see God's the one who does this because you've been revering him. And as you experience God's blessing, it's not because he's ticked off at other people and just wants to show off for you. But there's a way that when we live following after him, something incredible happens. It's like by obeying him, we get to reap the consequences for that. Again, when we obey God, we reap the consequences of blessing. Discipleship. One of the direct correlations for discipleship is as we're growing in Christ, we begin to experience blessing. We also experience the other things that go with life. But God's blessing and his hand are always upon us. And it's really not about our own efforts, it's about his. I love the psalmist says, enjoy the good life. There's an old Hebrew proverb that says, we will be held accountable by God for all the permissible pleasures that were available to us that we did not engage in. At some point in the Middle Ages, it became very holy to avoid anything fun. And the very reason that God sent Jesus on the earth was, he said, to give you life in all of its fullness. And so if we're saying, no, God, I don't want to enjoy any of the good stuff. I want to show how holy I am. He's like, you're doing it wrong. Enjoy the blessing. Enjoy the good life. Life is meant to be embraced and enjoyed. According to our world ways and means, that means a life of ease, a life of honor. Look how great I art. Wealth accumulation. Wealth accumulation, without getting into economics or capitalism, really, wealth accumulation can be, world style, we take from others or we get from others in order that we can have. And there's something that where God says it's better to give than for us to receive. And when we give and we share from what God has given to us, we end up enriching others. And I love, there's that quote about, we will see fruitfulness happen in others. Just like the psalmist is talking about, you'll see fruitful vines and olive shoots. When we are giving from what God's given to us and we are a blessing to other people, we start to see God's blessing touching other people because of our giving. And he's utilizing us to bring life and growth in other people. Who wants to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem? Yeah, pretty much. There's 7 of us who want to be the part of the problem, okay? In every crowd, there is. No, to be part of the solution is we get to give from what God's given. And nobody's like, okay, if I give, I'm not going to have enough. No, the whole thing is we can't outgive of our time, energy, and effort. What are the tricks? What are the 7 secret steps that they teach you in pastor school on how to really grow for Jesus? There's 7 of them. I can't tell you, it'll kill me. Okay. No, there's no tricks. There's no like secret manual. There's no 20-minute video. Just watch this and then it's like, just get to the point. I want to hear what are the things. In a nutshell, it is commit your life to Christ and start following him. That's it. Commit your life to Christ. Start following him. You will experience growth. You will experience blessing. You will experience the reality of his presence in the middle of life's darkest times. There is no secret. There is no only the few can do this. If it was only the few could do this, we would be like the Marines. The few, the proud. No, it's really the humble and the whoever is willing to embrace that teaching. You okay with that? Good. It's in the Bible. Psalm 129. You can say anything to God and he's okay with it. It doesn't mean anything you say to God is going to be good or right. He can handle it when you give him your worst. And I would recommend stop Christianizing your feelings. Well, I can't talk that way to God. That's faithless talk. Oh, sometimes you're ticked off and you want to yell. And if we go yell at people, we do destruction. Go yell at God. The Psalms are full of it. For an example, Psalm 129, they kicked me around ever since I was young. This is how Israel tells it. They've kicked me around ever since I was young, but they could never keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never going to keep me down. Yeah. It's the song of the church, that part only from that song. The rest of the song, not so much. That part, yes. Their plowmen plowed long furrows up and down my back. Then God ripped the harness of the evil plowmen to shreds. Oh, let all who hate Zion grovel in humiliation. Let them be like grass and shallow ground that withers before the harvest. Before the farmhands can gather it in, the harvesters get in the crop. Before the neighbors have a chance to call out, congratulations on your wonderful crop. We bless you in God's name. Pictures. A plow. This is Farmer Bob. This is his horse. And this is a plow. There's wood and there's iron, and he's digging up the ground to make it so you could actually plant seeds in the ground and have them grow. The imagery of they plowed furrows in my back up and down. Think of what they're saying. This isn't just like they were messing with me and they really were giving me the business. This is they took the plow and were digging it into me and went up and down my back. Next picture is the furrows of the field. A freshly furrowed field. Up and down. Do you know that I don't know what it is. Somebody could probably explain it. But there's parts on your back that if you touch them wrong, it feels like you've been stabbed with a hot poker. They're way more sensitive than they should be. I don't know what it is. There's other parts that are not as sensitive. But with the furrowing of the back, up and down, it is intentional persecution. It wasn't like my bad. It wasn't like the little girl who got kicked in the face and launched in the swing. This is an intentional persecution with the intent to cause destruction over and over and over and over and over again. This is Israel's story. And they are a people who have outlasted persecution. I went through and I made a very partial list of the nations who would have been a part of persecuting Israel. Here's what I found. Egypt, Mesopotamia, Moab, Ammon, Canaan, Midian, Philistia, Assyria, Babylon, Chaldea, Media and Persia, Amalek, Edom, Syria. And that's just the first 10 books of the Bible. Over and over and over the persecution. Israel are God's chosen people. And it wasn't because they were awesome. God didn't say, wow, these people are really cool. Instead, they were nothing. And so God said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take nothing and make it something. And through these people, I'm going to bring life, salvation, and transformation to the world. As a result, the Israelite people over and over were targeted by the enemy who came to steal, to kill, and to destroy, to attempt to stop God's plan. The Genesis through Malachi in the Old Testament, one of the subplots that runs all the way through it, is God saying, Adam and Eve sinned, so I need a way to bring redemption, and he starts narrowing down. I'm going to do it through Israel. I'm going to do it through the tribe of Judah. I'm going to do it through the family line of Jesse. I'm going to do it through King David. And he starts narrowing it down. So when it comes down to it, The devil knows exactly where the Messiah is going to be born. He has a really good idea when it's going to happen. God does like this big in the sky fireworks with a star that's just monstrous pointing. It's like, okay, it's happening now. Satan, what are you going to do about it? God is just like throwing down. No, here, think you can stop it? I don't think so. The whole Old Testament leading up to that is God is going to reveal himself, and there's nothing the enemy can do to stop it. But he's going to attempt to over and over and over again. And they're persecuted. The plows are being dragged along their backs up and down. In the Psalms alone, this particular question is asked of God. How long? How long will we have to wait for deliverance? How long until you jump in? How long until we get relief? It says, but then God ripped the harnesses from them and turned them into shreds. God always jumps in over and over to deliver. There's no way to say this next part nice. What we see is the writer of the Psalms processing anger, and he's cursing the individuals who have done this to them. He does not have God's heart for them. Let all who hate Zion grovel in humiliation. What does it look like to grovel? Think about it. I'm going to go Lord of the Rings unless you give me something. Okay, worm tongue. Okay? When King Theoden is getting ready to dismiss him, so you can either go to Saruman or you can serve me, and he's laying on the ground and begging and, you know, okay? It's not pretty. If you grovel, you're humiliated. If you grovel, you have nothing. You have no self-respect. There's no pride. You are just at the mercy of everything. The writer here is saying, let anybody who is against us, let them grovel. Let them be on their faces in humiliation. That's not good enough. Let them be like grass in shallow ground, so that when the sun comes up, they die quickly. Grass in shallow ground. Mark chapter 4, it talks about seed that falls on ground that there's very little dirt. And it says it springs up quickly because there's no root. It dies. The guy is saying, the people who are our opponents, may they die a slow and painful and at the same time quick death. May there be no harvest for them. May they wither. May they be dead. May they have no life. May there be no blessing. And God, before even someone would come along and say, wow, look at the harvest here. Blessed are you in God's name. Take them out there. That's what I'd like for you to do. And there's nothing at the end. It's just one of those awkward pauses where it's like, there's something pretty strong in there, huh? It's okay to go and take these feelings and processings to God, because he knows what's in there anyway. When we're doing it here, it can be something incredibly destructive if we're just, I just got to vent. You know what happens when we vent in this direction? We usually blow things up. We leave, you know, little bloody body parts of the people we've interacted with. When we vent this way, all of a sudden, we get to the end of it, and God just takes it. And I can remember standing, I was out in the wilderness, so you knew it was serious. I'm out in the wilderness, and I'm yelling at God, and I'm so frustrated. And I was saying words that my mother told me I should never say, and they were coming out. And I wasn't like, wow, you know, this is really cool. It was just more, I'm done. I have nothing else to say. I can remember being at a spot where I'm just kind of hands on my knees. And God's like, what else you got? And it wasn't a taunting, like, what else you got, Louis? that all you got? Come on now. No, that's what little brothers do. Okay, that is not what God does. But it was more, what else you got? I can handle this. And in that, I was brought down. It was almost like I get to have a perspective. Okay, this is what I'm experiencing. This is what I feel. And I'm asking you about where you are and what you're doing. And I realize that you have nothing to do with what's going on with my suffering. You have nothing to do with all this other circumstances. That's life. That's the world we live in. But it also gives me a perspective on the fact that you're here with me and you're safe enough that you can listen to me going off. And then somehow you're redirecting my heart to line up with you. Because if we do not acknowledge that we have ugly in here, we ignore the fact that God wants to get the ugly out of here. I'm a Christian. I don't have those kind of feelings and thoughts. If you're breathing, you have them. Acknowledge them. Don't revel in them. You know, don't sit around and think how you can take people out. Talk to God about it. He keeps our heart and our head straight. And then he trains us in patience and in ways to grow in creativity, in love, and care. All these psalms are a testimony of God's faithfulness. I'm going to close with this quote. The psalms are not sung by perfect pilgrims. The pilgrims of old made their mistakes just as we make ours. Perseverance does not mean perfection. It means that we keep going. We do not quit when we find that we are not yet mature and there is a long journey still before us. Chris, let's bow our heads. Oh, Heavenly Father, I ask that you take these two psalms, Psalm 128, Psalm 129, the blessing and the reveling in the good life and the wipe them out, God. And I want to ask that you would do a work inside of us, Lord, that we can not only experience your blessing and grab a hold of that with both hands, but that we can also not try and Christianize our feelings and pretend we're something that we're not. But we can have conversations with you that are raw and real, that we let you in even into the dark areas of our hearts, that you can do a transforming work to take that stuff and to make it new and to make it whole, that those uglinesses do not have to be coming out in our relationships with people. I thank you for your faithfulness, Lord. In Jesus' name.
This has been a podcast presentation of Hillside Foursquare Church in Reno, Nevada. You can reach us at web@hillside4.org.